You're listening to Speak Loud, resilient stories of triumph and hope, helping you to turn your past into fuel for your best future. Here's your host, founder of the 501c3 Share, providing resource and support for trauma victims, and a survivor herself, Tiffany Barnes.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Speak Loud podcast. As always, I am your host, Tiffany Barnes, and thank you for joining me today. I have the pleasure of introducing you to my guest today. Before I do, I want to give a little bio on her, give a little, you know, spiel before she gets into her story. Her name is Corby Mitlide, and she resides just outside of Albany, New York. She's originally from Jersey, but she's now living in Albany, New York, with a lot of cows. She said there's a lot of cows, not a lot of people. She has a book called Clean Out Your Life Closet. She's an international psychic medium. She is a breast cancer survivor, a writer and a visionary, a certified tarot master, and her talents as an intuitive have been featured in many best-selling books. Without further ado, please welcome Corby Mitlide. Take it away.
Thank you.
Yes, I am honored to have you. I'm excited for this conversation. It's gonna be a different one. You've been practicing the intuitive side of things since 1973. So you've got some time under your belt.
I'm an old lady. I just turned 56 this week.
So congratulations. Yeah. Happy late birthday. Very cool. So take me through, if you will, you know, you have been through some trauma in your life. We don't focus on that trauma. We want to talk about some modalities to heal from the trauma. Mm-hmm. But take us a little bit down the road from when you were younger and some of the abuse that you had endured.
All right. Let's see if we can get this into a 30-second elevator speech. My mother was an alcoholic, cross-addicted with barbiturates. One of her favorite sayings was, "I think I'm wonderful and you don't deserve me." She had a talent for if she didn't like what you said, she had a very fast backhand. One minute you would be normal and the next your neck would be cracked around. She was a chain smoker. She and my father had a very, very difficult relationship. It was, you know, one was in the mental hospital, and when one came back, the other one was in. And of course, they were all medical. Dad was a doctor. My brother has become a doctor. Mom was a nurse. Me, Shakespeare, acting, writing. I was, you know, the alien. So it was a life where I had to make up stories in my head to tell me how to process things. As a result of all of this, plus by the age of 11, I matured and I had a Dolly Parton figure. And that ain't easy being a teenager. There was an incident that happened when I was 16, where my mother found contraceptives in my drawer. I mean, I was in high school. I bought them. Me and my friends, we took a look. We pulled one out to see what it was. I'm still hurt. But she said, "Obviously, you're a whore. That's all you're ever good for, looking like that. No man will ever want to marry you. They'll only want to fuck you. And at 16, you're very impressionable." So I could have gone two ways. I could have said, "Oh yeah, I'll show you," and stayed a virgin until I was married. But instead I thought, my mother must know something about me that I don't, which then set me up for roughly 30, 35 years of thinking all I was good for was sex. The sex was a bargaining chip. I had no right to say no, which got me in an abusive marriage. It got me raped. It got me, heavily drugged. And it wasn't until I was in my 40s that I said no. I discovered what I needed to do to pull myself out. I am now in a terrific 20-year marriage. And I show other people that you can do what I do. I'm not special.
Wow. That is a quick little synopsis. So I want to ask you, though, were your parents ever supportive of you? I mean, I know they probably wanted you to go into the medical field based on, you know, what
Dad
they
wanted
did.
To be a lawyer, but
oh,
but my father was my best friend.
Oh, okay.
We shared the same birthday. I was his 34th birthday present. And for my first 4 years, I was convinced I came in a box with ribbons. my mother died in 1984. He remarried in 85 to a absolutely glorious woman who was more of a mother to me than my mom, because she had the emotional equipment to do so. And my father died 20 years ago, still miss him. So yeah, there was some good stuff, but mom died when I was in my late 20s, so the damage was really already done.
Mm. So how did you start to heal that damage? How did you realize, okay, this is something that needs to be taken care of in a sense? And what was the first modality you went through?
There was a wonderful place in Massachusetts called the Option Institute. Now they're kind of winding down. They still have Zoom classes, but back then it was you go and it was an immersive experience. And it was run by Barry Neal Kaufman and his wife, Samaria Kaufman. And they gave me keys to the rest of my life. They taught me that there are three important questions in life. What are you X about? X being unhappy, afraid, whatever. Why are you X about that? And then what do you think would happen if you stopped being X about that? There are two seminal books. One is called To Love Is To Be Happy With. The other is called Happiness Is a Choice, that Kaufman wrote back in the 80s and 90s, that gave me my first tools. What I also learned was that I was a lot stronger than I knew. The next tools came from the work that I did with Robert Schwartz. He's written two books, Your Soul's Gift and Your Soul's Plan. And there's a new one coming out, Your Soul's Love, in a few months. And the work I did for him in there was as a past life retrieval expert. Mm-hmm. Not regression, but retrieval. That's where you ask me a question, I go up into the Akashic and I say, here's the book, read chapter two. But we also did work on my story. And what I realized was everything that happened to me was choice. It wasn't punishment. It was that the soul comes down to learn certain things. Mm-hmm. That my mother was actually a very good soul, but she and I agreed in the pre-birth planning session, this is what you're going to have to go through because you've chosen to learn to value yourself as a woman. So it's why I came down with a Dolly Parton figure that I could not cross-dress out of. but what happened was it took me until my mid to late 40s to really understand this. When I kept not learning, basically my higher self said, okay, look, we need you down there. There's so much work that we want you to do. So we're going to remove the problem. So after the first bout in 89, four lumpectomies and radiation, second bout in 2000, which was skin cancer, I still had them. But then I got a third bout. It was a second primary, so the clock's back to zero. But the doctor said, all right, three strikes, you're out. We're taking the boobs, we're taking the ovaries, we're turning you from this Dolly Parton figure, hot to trot, to a fat fire plug with permanent side effects, and you can't ever have sex again because we're going to destroy your insides. In 3 weeks, suck it up.
Oh, boom. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, they didn't tell me quite everything that was going to happen, but this, in hindsight, is what it was. They were, I mean, fabulous hospital, but they were of the idea, if we cure you from cancer, nothing else matters. So, and this is when I had just been married for a year and a half to my wonderful current husband. So I went home for 24 hours and I cried. Who was I going to be? They were taking away my identity. They were taking away what I thought was my value. Would my husband even stay? But again, through Option, I knew I had to come up with three reasons to be okay with it, no matter how stupid they were. So the first thing was, you don't have them, you can't get cancer there. That's one. Number two, they're not going to get slammed in the refrigerator door at the doctor's every year, and every single woman listening knows what I'm talking about. And third, implants, cool, I'll be perky till I'm 93. So when they wheeled me into the OR and I was hopped up on fentanyl and Versed, which is a great pre-op cocktail, put you out left field in space cadet. I had two surgeons. I had the one who was going to take off the stuff. And my wonderful plastic surgeon, which we called Madame Artiste and Doc Miracle, because she is and she makes them. And I said to the one guy, you got 3 hours for the demolition work. And I looked at Dr. Hurdle and he said, you got 3 hours for the front end alignment. Get me out of here in six. Well, they did a great job. I got out of Mass General in 3 days, shopped for a bathing suit in five. That was in 2004. I'm still here.
Wow. Yeah. And when we talked about this prior to starting this episode, you said you don't call yourself a breast cancer survivor. You call yourself a breast cancer dancer. Tell me why you prefer that.
If you say I fought breast cancer, what you fight fights back.
Mm.
If you say I'm a survivor, it gives the image of hanging on by teeth and toenails. But as a breast cancer dancer, I found out how graceful I could be under pressure. I avoided getting my toe stepped on, and I got off the dance floor in one piece. So I say I danced with cancer three times. And when other cancer dancers hear that, it's like a tsunami of, I don't have to be a victim. No, you don't. It's why a couple of articles on my website, one of them is A Light Companion on a Dark Road, how you can support people who are going through divorce or cancer or another trauma. And the other one is being a co-conspirator is better than being a patient, because you want to really get well, you can't be a sheeple. You have to be completely involved in what is going on so that you're not just a file folder and a number to the doctor, you're a person.
Right.
Makes all the difference in the world.
Give us a peek into that first article you just mentioned that's on your website, you know, about the darkness. Give us a peek into that concept.
It doesn't help the person going through it to hear, I'm so sorry. Oh, that's terrible. When my grandmother, but I don't want to hear about anybody else having stuff.
Yeah.
Say, and don't say, let me know if I can help, because we're exhausted at that point. We can't parse that out. Don't promise help if you can't do it, but say something tangible. I know you're going to be fatigued after the radiation. Why don't I come in and walk Freya every day for you? Or I know that you're going to be kind of brain fogged. I will take you out on Wednesdays. We'll do grocery shopping. That's vital. Do for them what they want, not what you would want. Some people would want flowers and Hallmark movies and a pink stuffed teddy bear. And for someone that, you know, their comfort food is grilled cheese and tomato soup and dirty jokes, that's what you get them. You don't judge it. You listen. Deep listening, non-judgmental listening to someone who's hurting is so vital. You don't make them wrong. You don't tell them you're not doing it right. You listen. You become what I call the Martian detective.
The Martian detective. Why do you call it the Martian detective?
Okay. When I look at you, if there was water coming out of your eyes, I might say, why are you crying? But I could be wrong. Now, you got a Martian or somebody from Planet Zorch who knows from nothing about humans. And he would walk up to you and look and say, why is there water coming from your eyes? And he'd get a better answer, because maybe your contact lenses are bothering you, or maybe you have allergies, or maybe there's an emotional basis.
Got it.
So again, don't judge. If you said to them, what's upsetting you? Why is it upsetting you? Don't say it shouldn't upset you, or, well, how about this? Just let them talk.
Right. And that pertains too to people coming out and saying they've been abused. You know, one of the biggest things with me is I had a teacher that I opened up to, and she could have very well blew me off. Right. But the fact that she listened in a point that I was suicidal and I was anorexic made all the difference. And I tell people, sometimes the only thing you can do is listen. If that's all you have to give, listen, you know, it makes such a difference.
I read another article called Sometimes What People Need Is a Good Listening To. Now, this is really important with people that have been through abuse and trauma. You know, I don't want them to think my karma said I deserve this. No, 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 no. No. Spirit, God, Ralph the Wonder Dog, however you see him, loves you, wants the best for you, and is willing to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
Your higher self sees a role to play to learn things. I'm going to bring a massive amount of knowledge back when I transition over. But I could have gone in either direction. When my mother did to me what she did, that was like saying I'm going to be a history major at Brown. I could have taken gut course to learn it, which was stayed a virgin until I was married, had kids, blah, blah, blah. Instead, I did all the stupid things, and I call that doing a double major plus lab. Either way, I'm going to graduate with the knowledge I need. So don't ever, ever, ever make someone who has been through trauma or abuse wrong. Don't you dare be supercilious or, well, I could have handled it better. Don't you dare. Mm-hmm. Because you are invalidating their pain. You're saying your pain doesn't matter as much as my ego, my looking good. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you that is the wrong way to handle it for anybody. That's just more of what we got with a different coat on.
Let's talk about, you talked about victimhood, people having that victim mentality. You know, you were specifically talking about with your breast cancer. Yep. How, I shouldn't say how, what advice do you have with your profession and your years of experience to help somebody listening get out of that victimhood state of mind? Because that is very easy to fall into and very hard to change.
Pity parties get you nowhere. It doesn't mean you can't hurt. It's like you hear the word pity and you hear the word compassion, and they're very different. Pity is kind of looking down, gee, I really pity him, he's in such bad shape. Compassion is, oh my God, that looks painful. That looks so hard. How can I help? I am you. What would I want in that situation to help me? Okay, reaching out. Remember that the longer you are a victim, the longer they win. Here's an example. I had a client who was also in this business, and her family did not approve. And so she never went into the area of the country where her family was because they all looked the same. You know, they all were the same family face cookie cutter. And she was being a victim, feeling like she was going to get told how wrong she was and evil. I mean, you know, this was the evangelicals. And when she finally decided, I will not be a victim to this, she went, she told her family what she did. And her brother, who was the head of the family at that point, just looked at her and said, well, as long as it's not illegal. She can't talk to them about her business. They have no interest. They don't believe in psychics. But because she refused to be a victim about their opinion anymore, it opened up a whole part of the country to her that she had limited herself from. Mm,
I see.
What they did, that was then, this is now. In this present moment, you have a chance to choose. You're allowed to choose differently.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. Every day is a choice. Every day is an opportunity to turn it all around. That's the beautiful thing about life, right? Every day you can wake up and change your life completely and make a choice to react differently.
Yes.
I want to step back a little bit from what you initially started talking about when you talked about higher self and you, in your belief, you went up to ether or wherever and you said, I'm going to go through all of this on purpose. It was a choice that I made before I came here. Mm-hmm. I agree with that 110%. And I've come to really, really agree with that in the last 5 to 6 years from things that have happened in my own life. Explain that to the audience, you know, for them to wrap their head around it, because it is very esoteric, right? It's something that's not maybe widely believed by others. But I think a lot of people that deal with trauma find their way to a Eastern medicine spirituality, if you will, because they realize Western medicine's not working.
Right.
So take us to that.
What I cheerfully called the wiki woo. Karma is not carrot and stick. Our understanding in Robert Schwartz's books were karma is five things: unbalanced energy, which is a neutral, healing, service, contrast. You want to learn about abundance, you have to have a rich life and a poor life, and healing of beliefs. Okay. Very often people will say, well, what about kids that get cancer? What did they do? Let's go back 20 years or so ago. And there was a kid, his name was Matty Stepanek, I believe, and he wrote a book called Heart Songs. He was this incandescent 12-year-old. He was on Oprah, poetry was bestsellers, and he died at like 12 or 13. Or you get Ryan White, who died of AIDS at 18. Remember, their souls are not kids. Their souls are ageless and wise. And they decided, I will devote this life to waking people up to the AIDS epidemic. I will devote this life to writing such incandescent, heartfelt poetry that I can change lives even when I'm gone. Okay?
Right.
And the other thing to remember is these are just parts we play. The example I use for that is, let's take the actor Matt Smith. Now, Matt was the 11th Doctor on Doctor Who. He's my doctor. But he was also Prince Philip in the first two series of The Crown. Those were two radically different characters. But they were both played by Matt, because Matt has that kind of range. Matt's like your higher self, your soul. And Doctor, Prince Philip, those are your incarnations. So you're not always the same. You choose different things to learn different ideas. For those people that say, but the Bible says it's only once, I'm saying we both got it right. The soul is what comes down time after time after time, learning, experimenting, bringing information back. Corby, she gets once. This particular concoction will never be down here again. I am a personality that the higher self is playing. And that kind of can weird you out. But realize that anytime you're doing good, anytime you're kind, anytime you make a difference in someone's world, that's your true soul. What we leave behind when we check out, anxieties, bad habits, fears, that's what goes away. So that your best self is what your soul is. Okay? Does that explain a little bit more for the audience where we're going with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess my next question would be, and sorry, I had to mute myself. My dogs are barking in the background. I think the mailman's here or something. Anyway, side note. How does one tap into that higher self to the fullest?
All right. Once more, you can do what I do. I'm not special. Meditation works. There's a wonderful book by Sanaya Roman and Dwayne Packer called Opening to Channel. It's how I learned to do what I do. You can also do regression. Now, you heard me talk about regression and retrieval. Here's the difference. If you do past life regression, it is a certified hypnotherapist, past life specialist, who is taking you into deep trance when you can go into the Akashic records and you can learn and relive a past life that is of import to you. One of the reasons that you must have someone certified is if you get stuck, if you see a traumatic situation, they have the technical chops to pull you out, let you just see it objectively. You're not reliving it. Mm. Me, I do retrieval, which means you say to me X, I go up to the Akashic, I pull something down, say read chapter 2. Here's an example. There was a woman when Rob and I were lecturing 10 years ago at Lilydale, very famous spiritualist community here in New York. A woman had butch short hair. She raised her hand. She said, why is it I'm always terrified to have wet hair in my face? I cannot stand it. I said, okay. Five syllable answer, Lusitania. In 1915, you were a passenger on the ship when it was torpedoed by the Germans. You went over the side, but you hadn't bobbed your hair. You still had that big, long Edwardian mass, which took on more water. It also made debris get caught in your hair, and you were pulled down and you drowned.
Oh, wow.
It's an instant download for me. And when I opened my eyes, she was absolutely white. And she said, is that why I'm afraid to get on a boat? I said, probably. Notice she didn't say anything to me about that. But that, I saw her again about 3 years later, January, like, mine. Down here.
Wow.
Because she realized it didn't have to be that way again. So realize you can choose. Choice is the biggest thing you have. Now, if you are one of those African school children who is kidnapped and raped, did you choose that? On a higher level, yes, but it may not help you deal with it then. Then it's simply moment by moment by moment survival.
Okay. Do you believe that people come to learn certain lessons, and if they don't, when they come back in their next life, you know, like soul contracts, I guess is what they're called, right? You have a soul contract that you're going to learn XYZ lessons while you're here. And if you don't, when you die, you've got to come back and still go through it until you've finished it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it's not quite that cut and dried. That's, you know, what you call soul contracts is what we call pre-birth planning sessions. You know, life between life, which a lot of people do know about. Let's take me, for instance. Most of my lives tend to be male. I think I'm like 80 male, 20 female. I do my toughest work in a female body. From what I understand, when I'm a guy, I don't beat women up, but I'm your typical guy mansplaining, blah, 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 blah. And apparently, sexually, I'm not that evolved. Doesn't mean that I've beaten them, but I don't treasure as I should. So this time, I came down as a female to live out all the things that I thought as a male, women were supposed to do. And see it from the other end. Am I going to bring back lessons and probably change next time? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Dawn broke over Marblehead in this life. But that's how it works. I want people to release the need to dwell on fearful possibilities. The universe is not out to get you, but support you. But if that means some tough lives where you learn double major plus lab, it's not because the universe likes to do grishas. Do you know what the word grisha means? It's Yiddish. It's you stick in the knife and you twist it to make sure it's in good. The universe doesn't do grishas. The universe is, we want you to be the best you can. And we'll help you by giving you these lessons so that you walk through them. Besides, you take a look at my mother's soul. She came in as an alcoholic cross-addicted with barbiturates to learn lessons and to set up a situation with me where I could choose. Maybe she'll never come back as an alcoholic. I don't know. But when you realize everyone is in a part to play, it enables you to forgive and move on. Forgiveness does not mean it's okay, you did it and you could do it again. Radical forgiveness, I think Colin Tipping's written some brilliant stuff on that, is I am releasing the energy completely and so can you.
Forgiveness is huge. I've said that in numerous episodes, that if you don't forgive, it's like a cancer in your body. That's the best way I can describe it. It eats away at you. It's dis-ease, right, as they say. And it's so key to overcoming trauma, I believe. And I've seen that in my own life. And like you say, it's not you're saying, I forgive you, what you did was right, but releasing that energy towards it. So I think that's a very, very valid point. Okay, we're running out of time, but I want to ask a few more questions before we end here.
Yep.
First and foremost, I'm very intrigued. How did you know you had these intuitive psychic abilities? Like, when was the first moment you realized you had this and started to tap into it more?
Oh, that's the other 30-second elevator speech. Okay. When I was 9, I read a book called The Witch Family by Eleanor Estes. And instead of thinking, ooh, that's scary, or ha, 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 I thought, and your point is, I knew there was magic in the world and I wanted to go find it. Fast forward to 1973, when I was a senior in high school, working part-time at Spencer Gifts. That's when the movie Live and Let Die came out with Jane Seymour as Solitaire. And they had the James Bond 007 tarot deck. I bought it. I mean, we were all hippies then. You had your elephant bells, and you had your fringe jacket, and you had your deck. 5 years later, everybody else had moved on to disco balls and roller skates. I was still reading the deck because I was fascinated. And I made sure that I cleared myself out so it was not my stuff, but I was a clear channel for the information. That's why all of a sudden in 1994, I could do hands-on healing and talk to dead people with no training. That was the universe saying, hello, here's your draft notice. You're now working for us. I did that part-time while I had a very checkered career: actress, author, inspirational speaker, video producer, legal assistant, executive recruiter. But when I saw the tower burns on 9/11, I turned to Carl and I said, I need to do this work full time. People need to know there are other answers out there. He said, I believe in you, go do it. I spent one more year in the corporate world making sure that I can make a living at this. And then 2002, gone, and I've never looked back.
Wow. And I'm sure it's something that's so fulfilling for you to help others get answers that they feel they can't find themselves. However, they can, right? Everybody has the ability to be an intuitive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I say is I get to get up in the morning. I don't have to get up in the morning.
That's right. Absolutely. So what makes you feel empowered?
Knowing how much I've gotten through and I'm on the other side, and being able to reach out to people and say, you can do what I do, and seeing lives change. My sentence of passion, that's basically what I get to tell God I did when I get upstairs and he hands me a beer and says so, is cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. When I can take somebody from point A to point B when they thought they couldn't make it, whack them on their shoulder, say, here are your wings. You don't need a flight plan. Now get, I am living my bliss.
That's beautiful. I love that. What if somebody wanted to work with you? You work with people remotely?
Hell yes. I've got people I work with in Brazil. You think they want to come to upstate New York with the cows and the sheep? No.
So how would somebody get in touch with you? Let's say they want to buy your books. Maybe they want to tap into what you have to offer as far as services. Give us that information.
Oh, I'm easy. You can find me anywhere. Main source is my website, which is corbymidline.com. There are articles on all three of the books I've written, and you know, you get them on Amazon. Life Closet is out in paperback, Kindle, and I did the audiobook. So if you want me to read it to you, you can do that too. You can find me Fire Through Spirit on Facebook. You can find me as Corby Midline on Instagram and Twitter and Pinterest and YouTube. YouTube is very important. I have a lot of videos there that will help people.
Awesome. Yeah, I need to get on that YouTube bandwagon. I've got these videos. I'm not putting them on there.
No, you got it, girl. You got it.
I know. I need to. We will also put that information, you guys, in the show notes. So if you didn't have a chance to hurry up and write it down, or you're in your car or anything like that, it will be in the show notes. Literally just click and it will take you directly to her website. Now, I want to ask you this, Corby. If you could turn back the clock and talk to your younger self, let's say that first year that you faced that trauma, what would you have said?
I probably would have just looked at her and said, look very carefully. This is who you're going to look like in your 60s. Not what you think. You will be married and it will be happy. You are valuable. No matter what you have to go through to get to me from you, please know that it's worth it.
Love that. What are you hoping that the audience will take away from today's episode?
I hope they'll breathe a little more easily, blame themselves a little less, and start looking for tools that will help them get up in the morning.
Beautiful. What's your passion project right now?
The next book after Clean Out Your Life Closet. The Self-Development Project is a trilogy. Clean Out Your Life Closet, The Big Reboot, and Be Your Own Masterpiece. The Big Reboot, I want to get written this year, but it was originally planned in 2019. I'm going to have to make it post-COVID because lots of things we thought in 2019 are way different in 2021.
Yes.
But that is definitely a passion project.
Very cool. All right. Well, I always, any last words before we go on to what I call 20 questions?
I am so grateful that you made time for me today so that I could maybe get some of my ideas out there. Thank you.
You bet. It's been an honor to have you. I want to almost like have a private session with you right now. So we'll have to talk about that offline. I want to tap into that. I'm so intrigued.
We'll talk, we'll have coffee, as we say in New York.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. You have a podcast, which I didn't even mention, called Tea and Crohn's.
Yes, and that's C-R-O-N-E-S, not Crohn's disease. It's myself with a splendid brewer. Her name is Katrina Rasbold, and we're both elders, and we talk about being an elder in the 21st century and how to look at the world in so many different ways. A lot of it is metaphysical, and some of it is just everyday.
Awesome. And that can be found on all platforms?
Yes. If you go to tandcrones.com, you'll find it on YouTube. And it's every Sunday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Wonderful. I'll be sure to tune into that. All right. So we've got me and the mouse in my pocket, apparently. I've got a list here, 20 questions. I'm not going to ask you 20 questions, but it's just kind of a fun way to end the episode here. So pick a number between 1 and 20.
13.
15?
13.
Oh, 13. Mm-hmm. Okay, number 13. If you could spend the day in someone else's shoes, who would it be and why?
Teddy Roosevelt or John Adams, because they were such powerful personalities, and I would want to see what America was like at those tipping points.
Hmm. Love it. Yeah, I always love asking that question because I'm always like, ooh, what are they going to choose? I didn't suspect you were going to choose that, but I love it.
I married a museum director who did an 8-building Revolutionary War site. We do history in this house.
Love it. Yeah, my dad's a history buff, so I grew up with that as well. Well, I want to say you are such a light in this world, and continue to shine your light and help others the way you are. And I'm just very honored that you took the time as well to be a part of this today, and for speaking loud up against abuse, and that it doesn't have to define you. There's ways around it and to heal from it. And you are one of those modalities. So you guys, if you tuned into this episode and this resonated with you, please be sure to reach out to Corby and share this with anybody else that might take something from it, because it's all about spreading the word and helping reverse the cycle. So as always, be the change you wish to see in this world. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Speak Loud. If this message resonated with you, please feel free to share it with anyone you feel could use the support. To find out more information about Share, our movement, and to join the cause, please visit sharethemovement.org. Until next time.